Okay. Last week we spoke about, to a large extent, about Pesach. This week, maybe we'll speak a little bit about before Pesach. You know, I guess you hear it many taxi rides, plane flights, in situations where you find yourself spending time with people from other circles. There's a something you'll hear often when the talk starts turning toward observance, etc. And that is that it's the heart that counts. The main thing is that the heart be in the right place, and that's really all Hashem wants. It's a you know the term politically correct. So there's also a term I have called emotionally correct. Meaning, you know, it's hard to dispute that. I mean, it sounds so beautiful. But you know what I'll say? I'll say that the truth is we agree with that too. You know, the Gemara says, Rachmana liba boy, Hashem is after our hearts. Nevertheless, it's hard to not notice that Judaism puts an awful lot of stress on action. On action, and on a lot of technical actions, meaning there are the actions that we understand are of great virtue, etc., tzedakah, chesed, but also on all kinds of different technical things that seem like a nitty gritty, and it's hard to really appreciate their significance. So let's make a couple of points, and then we'll really try to get to the depths of what we want to be talking about. So first of all, it's not two separate things. It's not that there's the department of the heart and then there's the department of action and you need both for whatever reason. The two are really one big package. We'll start with the simpler way of understanding it is that it's true. What Hashem is after is your heart. But you know what? Action is a major test of the heart. We want to see, is the heart really in the right place or not? How do we test that? How do we test that? The way we test that is, well, through action. Is your heart beating hard enough to get you off the couch? Is your heart beating hard enough? Is your heart strong enough to actually hold you back from saying something when you really feel like saying it? You're really provoked? Is the heart strong enough to keep you from doing something that you really feel like doing? So of course it's true that the main thing is that the heart be in the right place. But how do we determine whether the heart is in the right place or not? If it's in 10th place in your priority system, you know, and there's all kinds of other things. I don't know, my love for a certain type of movie is greater than Lamaisa. Will much more affect my actions than my love for Hashem. So is the heart really in the right place? It's not enough to just say in a theoretical way, well, when I think about it, or when I'm singing a soulful tune, you know, I'm in love with Hashem, and that's all that counts. Doesn't matter what I do when I finish singing.
Well, how about some of the heart? So we've said many times that you can have two people doing exactly the same action. But the person who has bitachon, their heart is in a different place than the person who doesn't.
Oh, that's right.
So they're doing both. They're both doing the same external act.
That's right. That's right. So the heart, it's the actions that A, show us where the heart is. But at the end of the day, and like you're making the point, right? We said a Gemara that says, Rachamna Liba Boy. The whole Sefer Chavis Halavis is bringing out that point. Ramchal talks about this at length. That the weight of an act that we do, its value, you can have this is all relative, okay? Any mitzvah that you do is worth billions. But relatively speaking, you can have one act that is a cheaper generic brand and another act that is a very, very high-class brand name, and it's the heart that determines that. You can have two, like you said, you have two people doing the same act, right? Two people are both... I don't know, taking a lulav, okay? They're both doing it. One is doing it with a lot more sacrifice. One is doing it with a lot more attention to the detail. One is doing it without coming from a place of gratitude, from a place of awe, from a place of appreciating the privilege of having a relationship with Hashem, from a place of love. And the other person is kind of doing it by rote, the way everybody does it. And there's no question that the first person's act is going to be much more heavyweight, carry much greater value. Now, here we have to stress again, we shouldn't say, I said a cheap generic version, but that's actually not true. Anything that you do in Hashem's service is of immense value. But relatively, it can be immensely greater value depending on what is behind the act, how much effort, dedication, heart, mind is invested in the act. But what we're seeing is that, yes, it's a two-way relationship. The heart by itself, when it's not expressed in action, you have to really wonder, is the heart really there? Is the heart really there? But the truth is that it goes a step further than that. It's not just that the heart is a test for the action. It's that you need the action to get the heart to the right place. And this is really what I want to be talking about now. I'll just give an example. And here I want to make a point, and this might suck a fine point, a subtle point. When we talk about the heart being in the right place, what do we mean? You know, there's just the level of momentary excitement, inspiration. That's not what we mean. We don't mean that we want the heart to be inspired at those moments. When we talk about the heart being in the right place, what we mean is that, yeah, your relationship with Hashem, it's a little bit the more boring, less exotic aspect of the heart that we're talking about. We're not talking about what you're feeling when your emotions are soaring on high and the beautiful music is lifting you to the outermost limits of Judaism, whatever that means exactly, and et cetera. Those are moments. Those moments can be utilized. Those moments can be utilized to get you to great places, and they should be. But that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about your heart being in the right place. When we're talking about your heart, or put it this way, that's a limited level of the heart that we're talking about. When we're talking about your heart, we're talking about the day-to-day heart, right? What are the things that you consider absolutely intolerable in day-to-day life? What are the things that you consider a must in your life? What are the things that you will maybe, but it's not so important to you? The things that mamish, the aspect of the heart that mamish dictates one day to the next, the 24 hours. This is where the question is, yes, is what's in Hashem and is in your relationship with Hashem really a part of that? Now, this might still, can let me know if this is still a little abstract. I'm going to try to bring it down to concretize it a little bit more. We're getting there. But you know what? In order to bring out the point, you know, let me try to give just a concrete example. I hope this is not too abstract. Let's see. I'll give it a concrete example. Let's picture a person becoming observant. And this person is actually at the point of fully appreciating what Shabbos is about and is now ready to really observe their first full Shabbos. Okay? They've been to people's houses, they've been at seminars, they've heard lectures, and now they're actually ready to take the step. And this person has spent the week really reading up on Shabbos. Now it's Friday. It's Friday at noontime. And this person is feeling very, very inspired. This person has a true, deep appreciation of the beauty of Shabbos and is really, really looking forward to that moment of sundown when they're going to be really observing the first Shabbos. Okay? The person's on a high. As Shabbos is coming closer, the person is feeling more and more elevated and very, very inspired and excited about that first Shabbos. Okay? Pause. We're going to leave this person an hour and a half before Shabbos. We're going to pause. And now, we're going to fast forward 20 years. Okay? This person, he or she, has since kept many Shabbosim, married, a firm person, is raising a beautiful family, and has been through already many Shabbosim, many Yomim Tovim. And now, like we said, it's 20 years down the line. I'm again coming to Friday afternoon. Now, let's meet this woman now, Friday afternoon. Okay. She forgot all the speeches she heard about the beauty of Shabbos. She doesn't remember any of those things. Right now, she knows that the house is upside down. Shabbos is in 2 hours. The kids are going nuts. and she's sweating, and she's still hoping to squeeze in her shower. She's overwhelmed, and okay, sounds like a conceivable scene. So now let's take those two pictures. Okay, let's take those two pictures, and now let's throw something in. All of a sudden, opportunity presents itself to very easily make $20,000 by being Mechal Shabbos. Okay. In which situation is the person more likely to succumb? If we really think about it. Anybody would, by thinking about it, would be able to realize that it's the first person who would more likely succumb than the second. It's the same person. Where in the first scenario, right? It's new, it's exciting, etc. But $20,000. That first Shabbos can be next week also, right? The person who's already been keeping Shabbos for 20 years, and many other mitzvahs too. At this point, it's just not even a discussion. The person is going into Shabbos stressed, worn out, right? And the last year they heard about Shabbos was 17 years ago. But it doesn't cross their mind. There's nothing to talk about. This is an example of what we're talking about. The second person's heart is much more solidly entrenched in the right place than the first person, with all the inspiration and the feelings of elevation. Everybody with me on this? Why? How'd their heart get there? Because of another Shabbos kept, and another Shabbos kept, another one, and another one. It ingrained it into their reality, into their perception of life, into who they are. They became a person who just doesn't do malacha on Shabbos. Why? And what is virtually irrelevant at this point, right? This is what I mean when I say that it's not just that actions are the test of where the heart is, but actions play a very central role in getting the heart to the right place, in getting us to be that person to whom violating Hashem's will is just unthinkable. That comes through a lot of repeated performances of Hashem's will. And this is the famous rule of, it's expressed in many different ways in the Sfarim, Chitzonius Moreres Asat Pnimius, right? It's the externality that can actually draw the inner feeling. Sometimes we have to use both, right? The Lashon of the Chinuch is, Ha'adam nif'al t'fipu eloysef, a person is affected by his actions. It's the famous Rambam that says that if a person has $100 to give to tzedakah, better to give a dollar to 100 poor people. Now, okay, I'm not getting into the bottom line of mice of this. It depends on the situation, etc. But in principle, okay, in principle and concept, it's not that we want you to give tzedakah because the poor person needs the money. That's true too. But perhaps even more importantly is that we want you to give tzedakah because we want you, the Torah wants you to be a kind person. The Torah wants you to be a person who's sharing Hashem's midas. How do you develop those midas? You give again, and you give again, and you give again, and then giving becomes a part of your mindset, of your mentality, of your way of thinking. It becomes difficult to give when you see a need because you have so trained yourself to doing that. Question.
Okay, so the lady collapses into Shabbos. She doesn't have any real thoughts about the beauty of Shabbos, just the screaming children and the puddle on the floor, whatever it is. The other person is like, you know, 17 years ago, thinking about Hashem, thinking about Shabbos, thinking about the relationship. Does that not make any difference? Oh, like she wouldn't violate Shabbos, but it's just a fact of life at this point. It's not anything so special anymore because you've done it a million times and you have to do it, and you know, with all the kids and all the hassle.
So you're advocating, you want us to give more credit to the person in the first scenario, and 100%.
Credit,
yes.
Downplay it altogether.
Like, That's right. So I want to take a step back here. The downplaying was relative in order to make the point. But the truth is that, yes, we're not taking that away at all. But what we will say is like this. Again, contrasting those two people, the person who doesn't have the experience, who doesn't already have it ingrained in who they are, but is feeling all that elevation, that's immense. And that's always a challenge with these things, to be able to bring out two sides of a coin without downplaying one side of it. It's immense. Nevertheless, the other person is in a better state, is in a higher spiritual state. Their challenge is now going to be, see how much feeling you can infuse into it. But nevertheless, when a person is in a reality where it's obvious that I am going to perform according to Hashem's will, now I have to imbue more feeling into it. This is how a Rebbe of mine put it. You know, we have the concept of mitzvah anashim milumada. We disapproval expressed that doing things by rote. Right? Person shouldn't be living by rote. Now, here's a fine point, but it's a very important point. So does this mean that, yeah, a person becomes Baal Tshuva, Shabbos becomes a given. Now he's dropped in his level because now Shabbos is a given. Are we meant to try to keep it at a place where Shabbos is a struggle every week? No, you're moving higher by getting to a place where Shabbos is a given. And now here's the way one of my rebbes put it was, he said, doing mitzvahs by rote is a problem. But if the mitzvah isn't a given, then you have a more serious problem. Your immediate call is get yourself to a place that you're doing it by rote. If you're doing it by rote, then infuse the feelings into it. But if it isn't a given yet, you're in a worse place. Now, I shouldn't say a worse place. I should say a not better place. You're in a place where maybe yeah, maybe not. You grow to a place, but I have a lot of inspiration, and it's likely that I'll do it. You grow to a place where, oh, of course, yes. Right? Then you have to go from there. And that's a constant struggle to be adding more and more into it. But you know what? The way we'll put it is, the first person, it's only a few million that they're getting for their Shabbos. The second person is already getting a billion. And the question is, can they take it from there to the level of a trillion? We're not talking about $10 versus $1,000. Whenever we're talking about Ratzon Hashem, we're talking about immense value. But we're talking the whole time about how much. How much can we? It's endless. It's endless. So I hope that's clear. They say the story about Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker was known for his legendary generosity. Crazy stories about his levels of generosity. His home was famously a Grand Central Station. It was a place where anybody knew they could just settle themselves down. Women used to go there. It was before the Beit HaChlamah, right? Women used to go there after childbirth just to spend some time there until they recovered. There were meals being served. You came, found yourself a place. No, you didn't have a room that was allocated to you, but and people coming from a guest to town, whatever. So Reb Shimshon Pinkus said that this is one of his favorite stories. He said that there was once a fellow who came from out of town and he was looking for a place to stay in Brisk, and he was directed to the home of Chaim Soloveitchik. So he came in and he talked and saw people are coming and going and there's food out on the table, meals are being served. Found himself a place. I don't know exactly how it worked. It was all camping out on the floor. I don't know what the house looked like. Whatever the case is, he found himself a place. Settled down. He's there for a week. And then he's starting to wonder, like, how long can you be here? It wasn't a reception area. It wasn't like, it was just like kind of each man for himself. So he's wondering how long are you allowed to be here. So at the next meal, he turned to the fellow sitting next to him. And he said to him, how long are you allowed to stay in this place? So he said, I've been here for years. Nobody ever told me anything. What happened later was that he discovered that that person was actually Reb Chaim. It was the Baal Bayis. So one other story, just to bring out the point, is it's just a, I don't know, Claudia, it's a her, Claudia, it's a toy. Once a story comes to mind, I have to get it. But another Maisa with him was where, okay, now three stories. I'll just tell one. Part of his contract was that he would be provided with firewood. That was part of his salary. They provided him with firewood for the winter. Now the problem was that as soon as they delivered the firewood, a day or two later it was all gone. Why? Because he would notify all the people in town who couldn't afford heating that it's available. The shed is open and come take firewood. So within a day or two it would all be gone. When the officers of the Kihida saw that, so they bought another supply, but it was also gone within a couple of days. What's going on? So they heard what was going on. They came and they said, this firewood, we're setting it up such, we're not granting it to you. It doesn't belong to you. We're not giving it to you. It belongs to us. It belongs to the Gehillah. It's not your private. It's not your personal property. You're allowed to take a log every night and put it in your fireplace. That's all. So then they came back a couple of days later, and the shed was completely full. Nothing had been taken from it. I said, "What's happening now?" He said, "I can't keep my house knowing that other people's homes are not heated." So one time somebody commented to Reb Chaim that, okay, you were born with a generous nature. So he said, "It's not true. It's actually not true. I was not born with a generous nature." He said, the first time I gave away money, I mean, I guess he meant money that he wasn't obligated to give, money beyond mice or chemish, whatever it is. He said, "I felt like I was cutting off a limb. It was very hard to part with that money, a substantial sum." I don't think he meant 50 cents. So the first time I gave away a substantial sum, that because I decided that I want to, but said I felt like I was cutting off a limb. Then I did it again. It still was excruciating, but it hurt a bit less. And then I did it again. And then I did it again until it became part of who he was. These are famous concepts. But this is the bringing out the point that it's our actions when we have the inspiration. When we have the inspiration and we pile on the actions, that's how we really can affect who we are. The inspiration is on its own, it'll be very difficult for it to really change who we are essentially in 24/7. Right? Actions without any emotion, heart, mind behind it are going to be mechanical. But when you have both together, you have, I know what I want. I know that this is what I want. I want to be close to Hashem. And I am adding to the assault on my personality, if we put it that way. Actions in that direction. That is what will actually shape me into a person who is that. And this is the idea being that whether we like it or not, we aren't all heart. We have a big component of flesh and blood to us. We have a big component of what the Sfarim call Afriyus HaChoymer, coarse physicality, the earth part of us, if you put it that way. And therefore, whether we like it or not, the flesh and blood has a large say in our 24/7. We would like to think my heart is what dictates everything I do, but the flesh and blood has a lot of input. And we all know that from experience. So what we need, that's why we want to be processing our flesh and blood. And that we do with the external actions. We're pounding our flesh and blood into shape in order to get it aligned with the heart. The heart is setting a certain goal. It's setting a certain framework. But the flesh and blood might say, "I'm not in." Right? You can want that all you want, but I have first call, right? And I'm just going to continue pushing for the treif thing, whatever it is. And, you know, may the best man win, the flesh and blood says to the heart. You want to just do Ratzon Hashem? I want that good old treif cheeseburger. Let's see you compete with me. The only way to get it to a place where, no, the flesh and blood is in line with the heart is by many external actions. Many actions, pounding the flesh and blood into shape, if we'll put it that way. Shaping the flesh and blood aspect of us with where the heart is. And that's why, yeah, Yiddishkeit sets it up. My sister once had an exchange with, when she was in social work school. So she had this discussion with a Jewish girl living in Manhattan. She said to her, the Orthodox are a very selfish community. They're focused only on themselves. Why? They put a stress on raising large families. They're using up the earth's resources. And that's going to mean that in, I don't know, 200-300 years from now, there are going to be many, many starving Indian families or something like that. Many people are going to be starving because the amount of children is using up the earth's resources too quickly. And therefore, I'll just think about that for a minute, okay? This girl is completely altruistic. She's not going to marry, not going to raise a family because of her compassion for the babies from 300 years from now who will never bother her, never keep her up at night, right? But for their sake, she's willing to live a life of complete hefkerus. She's living to live on her own in Manhattan and just, you know, live, not have to worry about supporting the family, not have to worry about taking care of anybody else. She can completely just focus on her own immediate gratification. She can, instead of preparing the home for the family the next day, she could just spend her nights out enjoying the nightlife of Manhattan. All this is because she's so much more selfless than the Orthodox Jewish woman who's busy dedicating her life to raising children, giving the gift of life, and who basically her whole entire life is taken over by giving, 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 giving. When it comes down to it, right, that's where the question will be. When there's a neighbor who really needs help, who's going to be quicker to respond to the call? The woman whose life is giving, or the woman who so selflessly keeps herself in her own little bubble and because of her, she'll be very, very kind to the people who just won't make their appearance on earth as long as she's here. Those, they'll get the full blast of her compassion. The actions are what turn you into ultimately who you are. A life of self-centeredness is going to keep you in a self-centered place. A life of giving, giving, giving is going to turn you into a giving person. It's going to turn you into the Bria that Hashem wants you to be. And this is where we're approaching the Inyan of Pesach. There is a lot of action, in case I'm being machadish this to Jewish women, okay? There's a lot of action involved in the days, weeks, whatever it is, coming up to Pesach. And let's realize, let's appreciate what we're actually doing there. Let's appreciate what we're doing there. This is not a technicality. It's not that, well, the home needs to be clean for Pesach, so if I have no other way, I'm just going to have to sweat for those couple of weeks. Let's realize that these, before hitting the Leil HaSeder, these couple of weeks are an end in and of themselves. They're an end in and of themselves. Remember, it was one time a thought. We were invited by someone to join one of these hotel programs for Pesach in Switzerland many years ago. And so at the time, should we consider it? Should we not consider it? So I called a relative in Switzerland. This is an older Chassidus Yid. Part of a different generation. And I was talking to him, you know, the Ashkach is involved, the Rabbanim involved, the ins and outs. And then he said, you're gonna come to the program for Pesach. He said, you know how it works in these programs. He said, Erev Pesach is a holiday. You're on vacation Erev Pesach. Is that what you want? And I didn't get it. I was like, right. That's the point. What was he conveying? Now I appreciate the message more. Then I just really didn't get it. I thought maybe we're on a different wavelength or something. But the point is the appreciation of the fact that we're spending whatever the time is in intense activity of what? What? Of ensuring that our homes are in line with what Hashem wants. We never have a time of the year when there's so much active effort going into ensuring that my home is in line with Ratzon Hashem. Really, it's representative of the whole reality, of the broader system. Now, we always have to, you know, balance that with, you want to be able to do it b'simcha. You want to be able to do it to a place that doesn't get you over the deep end, that doesn't bring you to the Leil HaSeder as a shmata, and not able to handle it. Because this has to do with the fact of what we said before. It's not like, oh, now is the time for you to be doing things for Hashem. The Jewish woman is always operating intensely. Operating intensely is doing this all the time. So yeah, when we come to Pesach, we say, okay, now is the time of year for that. Yes, it's often necessary to find, okay, how do we get that right balance? But let's go back to this is not the halacha, you know, preparing your house for Pesach shir. Here we're talking about appreciating what it is we are doing. Appreciating what it is we are doing. And that is, yes, weeks of intense activity. For what? Because I have a relationship with Hashem. I appreciate the privilege of being in such a relationship with Hashem and appreciating that you have to do something toward it, that it has to be a mutual relationship. Hashem is drawing us close to Him, and we want to demonstrate our loyalty to Him. We want to demonstrate our loyalty to Him through showing Hashem we're going to go the extra 10 miles for you. So Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz brings this out in a very beautiful and powerful way. This is something that I think should really be on every person's fridge in these weeks. He says, you're busy cleansing and purifying your house, making sure that it is in line with Ratzon Hashem, with the purity, with the pristine nature that Hashem wants your house to be in. But realize that you're actually doing the same exact thing to yourself in the process. Because as you are sweating and exerting yourself, he says, the primary zikuch, the primary purification, the primary elevation, it's not just at the end of the day, your house is now polished. You are polished. Your neshama is now polished. You have been mezakich. You are purifying yourself. You're making yourself into more and more of a spiritual person. You're bringing your flesh and blood into the service of the spirit, into the service of the heart. Your flesh and blood is becoming something purer, something more spiritual, something greater. He says, if you really think about what the mitzvahs leading up to Pesach involved, so he says, when you have the Jew, this is his lashon. He says, "Hayehudi shel erev Pesach kvar ein kol b'riya yechol lamoid b'chitzos." He says, "The Jew of erev Pesach, not the Jew of Pesach before the Leil HaSeder, right? The Jew of erev Pesach, that's it. It's past midday. All the chametz is gone. The house is clean. But you are a different person. You are a raised person. You are a much more purified, pristine person now." He says, the Jew of Erev Pesach, no other creation in the world can get near that leap. Question.
Shouldn't men be participating equally in the cleaning then?
What's that?
Shouldn't men be cleaning just as much as ladies then? Because they want to be this purified person going into Pesach?
Yes. Now, how that plays out technically, it'll differ in every home. But ultimately, the answer is yes. Now, it's always a question of, with everything, it's a question of working out the practicalities. But the bottom line answer certainly is yes. And you know what? Birkas Chametz is not supposed to be 15 minutes of carrying the flame around. Birkas Chametz is meant to be a pretty intense business of really, you know, searching the house and being able to say afterwards, I can lay down X amount of money, whatever, I won't say how much, that you're not going to find chametz in my house. Everyone should be involved in the effort. Everybody should be involved in the exertion. Exactly how that should play out, okay, that we're going to leave for each household to figure out for themselves. But nobody should be dodging the concept of, if you're an Eved Hashem, you want to be showing your loyalty through your efforts, showing how far you're willing to go in terms of your dedication to Hashem. And you know what? This brings us back to, last week we spoke about the four sons. I want to go back to the Ben Rushim. By the way, I want to, in parentheses, make a comment. Look, I'm opening a parenthesis right now, getting off the subject for a minute, a tangent. The subject of the Ben Rushim was brought up last week. And the question was raised, you know, the Baal HaGadah seems to be dealing with the one who believes in the whole system, just doesn't want to be working too hard. And the question is, what are you doing with the people who just aren't interested in the whole system? So here I want to make a couple of points related to what we discussed last week. The struggling child is such a painful part of today's reality. And last week, we spoke about the dim-witted child, if you remember. We spoke about the dim-witted child. And so the kid who you feel like he's so thick-headed or actually, you know, mentally impaired, what's the purpose? And you know, let me put the efforts into the more bright children who will really be able to understand something well. What's the purpose in putting in the efforts there? And we said that Hashem's message in the Ein Yodea Lishol is that you have no idea how to gauge how much I value every inkling of understanding and closeness in each person. And therefore, you're looking at it from a human perspective of, oh, this kid's got more, this kid's got less. In my eyes, the greatest genius is only scraping the tip of the iceberg. But yet, the fact that he's putting the effort into that understanding and getting that understanding, I cherish immensely, Hashem says. So he said that that's the way to view. This is what the Haggadah is conveying toward the handicapped child too. Hashem is saying, you have no idea. If he, at the end of the day, yes, at the age of 17 years old, comes out with the understanding that there were bad people in Mitzrayim and Hashem took us out of there, you have no idea how valuable that is to me. Don't be quick to discount that at my expense, Kaviyachol, Hashem says. So we have to realize the same thing when we're talking about the Ranasyanis today that are often beyond us to appreciate. Children have gone through things, contending with things that are beyond us to appreciate. We have to realize that as parents, this is has to be said carefully, but we have to realize that as parents, our job is to take each neshama. Don't underestimate what the value is of anything. I'll just bring this out through it. I feel very inadequate talking about this whole subject. I'll try to bring out the point through by just relating an incident with Rabbi Aaron Leib Shteyman instead of trying to put it into my own words. But there was a man who had a yeshiva for struggling children. And they would take these kids in. They would put in immense efforts, a lot of support and a lot of attention. And he came back to Rabbi Aaron Leib after a couple of years, kind of disillusioned. And he said, in terms of the, if we'll call it the success rate, he said, I find that these kids come, they bask in the atmosphere that we create in the yeshiva. They lap it up. They connect. And then they leave, and there's no continuation. And he was just like demoralized after all these years. Like, where have we gotten them? What are we? So Rabbi Leib said to him, this is putting it in a simpler way, but Rabbi Leib said to him, he said, 1 minute. He said, for the 3 months, 5 months, year, they were in the yeshiva. They were actually putting on tefillin every day in davening. So why do you assume that the success is whether they did it afterwards also? That is worth all the effort. If you can get it, if you have no idea how great that is in terms of this kid, in terms of who he is. He did it then. We have to take it a step further and understand that, again, each person has his own cheshbon mishamayim, and the test of parents who are watching it is unfathomable. But when a parent will feel like, if at the end of the day this kid is not fitting the profile, you know, the classic standard profile, so that means that we just haven't succeeded. Hashem is a different box for each person, which on the one hand, we're trying to influence that box as much as possible. But on the other hand, to appreciate that, perhaps with this child, what Hashem is hoping to get to, and something that Hashem immensely cherishes, is that l'maisa, this child has warm feelings about Pesach because the Seder was an elevating experience. Will it translate into other areas of life? Even if it doesn't, don't say, so it had no effect. You don't know that. You don't know that. We don't know how valuable it is to Hashem that the child is experiencing those warm feelings, that the child's experiencing those elevating feelings, and that at the end of the day, the child goes away with a sense of Yitzias Mitzrayim was something very great. It doesn't get anywhere, might not get anywhere further in the child's life. But the difference between that and the kid not having that sense can be worlds, while a person looking at it so-called objectively might say, that's all it came to. So what did we achieve? No, not to view it that way. It's a big discussion. But I want to come back now, I want to close the parentheses here and come back to make the point that we said last week that if we're talking about, again, the Ben Rasha that the Rishonim that's being addressed there in the Haggadah, this is not the kid who's opposed to the whole system. This is the kid who has one problem. The way the Rishonim put it down. This is very fascinating. He's saying that he's coming with a firm argument. Right? We said this last week. He's saying, why do we have to go through the whole Shlepi Haggadah process? Doesn't Hashem just want us to enjoy Yom Tov? Why do we have to be doing? And the answer is that Hashem wants us to enjoy Yom Tov, and He also wants us to be putting in efforts to Him. Hashem wants it to be something two-sided. He has a lot of privileges for us, but He wants loyalty. He wants dedication. And loyalty and dedication is in the work. Yes, it is. The matzahs are an intense business. The way they're made, the way the matzahs have to be made, is a microcosm of the way Avodah Hashem is supposed to work in general. A lot of precision, a lot of attention to detail, a lot of attention to, a lot of energy. A slow-paced person, a person who can't move too fast, he shouldn't be involved in the matzah production. Right? So the attention to detail, sometimes people get caught up with, well, why is it so significant if this small detail is or isn't? No, look at it from a broader perspective. We want to show Hashem attention to detail. That's how the Chazon Ish puts it. The whole concept of the which we see so much when it comes to preparing the house for Pesach, the whole concept of the fine details of halacha are about us showing Hashem we are disciplined soldiers, right? in an operating room or in an elite unit of the army. Fine attention to detail is critical because you want top level performance. So you come and say, okay, come on. So it was 2 inches over to the right. 2 inches over to the right when you're in an operating room can be the difference between life and death. There, everyone appreciates the attention to detail. So we want to be able to come and show Hashem we are loyal, dedicated servants who are standing at your beck and call, ready to do anything. And the attention to detail is not necessarily about this detail versus that detail. It's about the dedication that we're showing. And it's about how through that attention to detail, through all that actions, we are elevating and refining and purifying the physicality, the flesh and blood. We're telling the flesh and blood, we're bringing you into this business. My heart is where it needs to be, but I want you to be where the heart is also. And then the heart will really be there. Then the heart will really be able to do its thing. So we come back to the bottom line, that lashon from the Biruchim, that the Jew of Erev Pesach, in terms of the pristine nature, not just of his home, but of who he is, of what he made out of himself, of the purification, etc. Ein mi yachal lamed b'mchitzasay. Who can possibly put themselves in that lead? Agut
Avach. Oh, we're on break, right, Bob? The last Pesach?
Yes.